Monday, April 8th, 1985. House Committee on Judiciary. Subcommittee 1, Public Hearing and Work Session, 1:30 p.m. House bills to be considered are 2502, 2483, 2544, 2638, 2642, 2855, 2384, 2663.
House Judiciary Committee Subcommittee 1 will come to order, please. We're going to try to follow our agenda, but we're going to make a couple of exceptions. The three bills are up for first hearing. I think we'll go ahead and take the hearing on those, 2855, 2384, and 2663. We'll take those first, and then we'll go into work session on the balance of the bills. We have several members who are here to testify on 2855, Representative Markham, Anderson, Trahan, welcome. If you'd like to come up together, be glad to hear your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the Judicial Committee, House. For the record, I'm Bill Markham, House District 46 from Josephine Jackson, Douglas Counties, and I have with me Representative Anderson, who has the majority of Douglas County, and Representative Trahan, who has the bulk of Josephine County, so we're kind of spread around down there in the southwest end of the state where we have a lot of rednecks we like to represent in a reasonable fashion. To the bill, Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2855. I plus some 50 plus members of the Oregon Legislative Assembly represent the counterforce to the fanatic and senseless proposals some cities and counties would make to strip all law-abiding Oregonians of their right to keep and bear arms. This bill provides for a standardization of firearm laws throughout the state of Oregon based upon current and future statutes enacted by this assembly. It makes null and void any local ordinances that are more or less restrictive than current law, such as the one in Morton Grove, Illinois, which I'm sure you're all aware of, which had a handgun ban, or the Chiloquin, Oregon mandate that you must own a gun to live within the city. I'm not so sure I don't want to amend that out, but I'll let it go for now. A state firearms preemption law will prevent a checkerboard effect of firearm laws within the state and create uniformity of firearm laws within Oregon. Such a uniform code is necessary to protect the law-abiding citizen of unwitting violations and or undue harassment that could result in every county, city, town, or consolidated local government in Oregon that decided to have a different firearm law. Passage of 2855 will also ensure the Equal Protection Clause for all guaranteed by the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and our own Oregon Constitution. However, this bill will in no way lessen current federal law, state law, or local ordinances which regulate the carrying of concealed weapons or weaken the power of sheriffs to administer state permit to carry laws. Communities will continue to be able to enact laws controlling the discharge of firearms for public safety and the sale of firearms according to the state and federal statutes. Since the push for local gun laws have superseded state law is a relatively recent phenomenon, being backed in most cases by those groups that wish to ban and or restrict the rights of law-abiding citizens to own and use firearms for legitimate purposes, the need for a state firearms preemption law is now clear here in Oregon. Since the passage of the Morton Grove handgun ban in 1981, over 100 communities have attempted to pass similar legislation nationwide. Such places in the Northwest include Seattle, Washington, Eugene to the south of us, Anchorage, Alaska, Boulder, Colorado, Green River and Pinedale, Wyoming, and Missoula, Montana. In May of 1984, a city council member in Eugene contemplated an ordinance which would have licensed gun owners and registered firearms. The passage of this ordinance would have meant that any law-abiding firearms owner, hunter, or competitive shooter would have been in violation of this city law and subject to stiff fine or jail terms for transporting a firearm through the city of Eugene, or owning one, I might add. Passing this type of ordinance in Eugene or other communities in Oregon could have a serious impact on hunting opportunities in the state and could result in serious loss in revenue for people that are in the recreational business. In December of 1983, the city of Rajneeshpuram enacted an ordinance which was so broad and poorly written that a businessman could not possess a firearm in his place of business for self-protection unless he had a permit to carry. Gun shops, gun shows, and shooting sport events in schools are outlawed, and a private citizen cannot possess a firearm in their home if their homes are on grounds adjacent to, quote, public buildings. Passage of 2855 would make this onerous ordinance null and void. A state firearm preemption law will curtail this movement in Oregon and ensure that state firearm laws will be enforceable throughout the state on an equal basis. In closing, I would like to note that I have received numerous letters and telephone calls from our Oregonians asking if they may assist in securing the passage of 2855. Furthermore, at recent annual meetings of the Oregon Rifle and Pistol Association and other sportsman organizations here in Oregon, the collective memberships voted unanimously in favor of this type of legislation to prevent the Morton Grove-style ban or any other potential harassment of the law-abiding firearms owners here in Oregon. I would like to thank the committee on behalf of all of us, the 50-plus sponsors, members of the Oregon Legislature, and I might add the 53,362 members of the Oregon National Rifle Association for the opportunity to discuss this bill with you today and encourage your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Why don't we hear from Representative Anderson and Representative Trahan before we take questions. Representative Anderson?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm representing Andy Anderson, District 45, representing Central and Eastern Douglas County. With regard to House Bill 2855, I believe Representative Markham has really said it all. I might only add that this would bring a good balance in the state of Oregon. And once and for all, we wouldn't have the silly ordinances of the Chiloquin type or the Morton Grove type, or worst of all, the one proposed in Eugene. I'm a firm believer in the one person, one vote rule, and you would probably argue then, why shouldn't people, the city council, be able to do this? And I would say that this could severely impact the residents who lived outside of the city of Roseburg. And for both those and many other reasons, I would urge the subcommittee to pass the full committee and on to the floor, House Bill 2855. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Trahan?
If you record, Mr. Chairman, Representative George Trahan, District 49, Josephine County. I think it's pretty well been said, Mr. Chairman. The one thing I want to reinforce, I guess, is that this kind of a legislation would give us some consistency throughout the state. We would not be in a situation where a citizen traveling or living or moving from one area to another would suddenly find themselves trying to comply with different types of legislation or local legislation. They would have a consistent rule in which they could all live. And I think for that reason alone that it's necessary to have this legislation.
Okay. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you give me a little background on the Chiloquin ordinance? Is that fairly recent? Has it created a lot of split in the community? Has it not worked at all? Any one of you?
Chairman, Representative Peterson, from memory, right after the Morton Grove episode, why the city council over at Chiloquin decided they'd go the other route and pass an ordinance that says you can't live here unless you own a gun. And that's really about all I know about it.
Okay. And is that still on the books as far as you know?
I really assume it has, or I imagine we would have seen it in the newspaper, but I can't be accurate on it.
Thank you.
Any further questions? If not, thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Tech Shively?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Tech Shively, we have a group called 100 Hunters. I'm speaking for them, but I was also phone from LeGrand this morning asking him to speak for a group up there on this bill. Several years ago, I had introduced legislation similar to this. Was stopped by a particular well-known senator, and I'd like to take the Fifth Amendment on not disclosing his name. He's a Republican. I am unopposed to this legislation because of the large number of people that travel across the state to gun shows and the like. Under this legislation, cities and counties would be prohibited from passing ordinance that would require checks of people passing through towns who happen to be carrying a gun. Many people attend gun shows throughout the state, and these shows are a great source of income for the state of Oregon. We don't want anything like the law in East St. Louis, where no one in the city of East St. Louis is allowed to carry a gun or have in a house. Also, it would be a great deal of a hindrance to hunters trying to obey all the different laws that cities might enact while going to the hunting camps in the fall, when and see what a debacle it would be caused by cars being searched. We need this law now, so please put a due pass on House Bill 2855.
Okay, Tex, we do have a copy of your written comments, which are also part of the record. Appreciate your opinion. Are there any questions?
I'd like to ask Mrs. Representative Peterson about
Chiloquin. If you know more about Chiloquin, yeah, we'd like to hear.
Yeah, that is still in the books. I was down there when they had the TV on there. The fact is, they asked me to come down and testify, and it's still in the books, and I found that Beard and two other fanatics were against it. And if you do not have a gun, I think you can get a special dispensation from the city council where you can get by without having one.
Thank you.
Okay, any further questions? If not, thank you, Tex.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. John Nichols?
My name is John Nichols. I'm representing the Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association. I won't take up a lot of time, except I'd like to second the testimony that's been given previous to this and bring the committee's attention to one item. You have before you a draft for public comment of proposed public safety policies prepared by the City and County Public Safety Policy Commission, City of Portland, County of Multnomah. I've provided an extract of that, of page 15, which indicates that the City and County of Portland, Multnomah are going to do something that we wouldn't particularly care to have them do. That is, they state that the safety of the public will be enhanced by reducing the availability of handguns in the city and county, and that the city and county should identify and implement appropriate administrative or statutory measures which will reduce the access to handguns. We feel that House Bill 2855 would head them off at the pass, so to speak. And so we urge the passage of House Bill 2855.
Okay. I guess it's safe to assume that you disagree with the policy statement made apparently by the City and County Safety Policy Commission that, in fact, the safety of the public would be enhanced by reducing the availability of handguns.
I think it's safe to assume that I disagree with that, and okay. It's the same old trigger pulls the finger theory of crime, and we don't believe in it.
Okay. Any further questions? Representative Kopetsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nichols, this bill, would you agree with Representative Martin that this bill in no way would prohibit local government, a city, from prohibiting a discharge of firearm in public?
I agree with that.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay, if not, thank you, John. Leonard Zygar?
Leonard Zyger from the Four Corners Rod and Gun Club. The club wholeheartedly supports this Bill 2355. We have members of our club travel statewide to compete in matches with other shooting clubs, and be very desirable if we had uniform laws statewide so we know whether we are in-laws or outlaws.
Okay, let's see if there are any questions, Len. Let me just ask you, have you personally had any problems in terms of the... Have you personally had any problems?
No, not in the state of Oregon.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Mr. Katz?
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Fred Kotz from Salem. I hope that as a minimum you will pass this bill as written. But I hope you will take an additional step and close what I think are two loopholes. They are semantics until push comes to shove between some local officer or some court, and then you'll pay your lawyer to find out what the words mean or their absence means. The two words are one use, U-S-E. The other one is the word sale, S-A-L-E. In other words, all I've got to do, if I can get a couple other commission members with me, if I'm in a county, or two or three if I'm in a city of some sort, is to pass an ordinance saying that there shall be no sale of firearms in County X, or there shall be no use of firearms in County X under whatever conditions I want to elucidate on, and you can go to Hades with all of the other permissions that are guaranteed in here. For example, if the legislature believes that cities ought to have the right to pass a local ordinance saying no discharge of firearms within city limits, it's a simple matter for the legislature to say, as it now does in statute, some things about what local governments can do. For example, local governments are free to keep people from shooting in the city limits. But these loopholes are serious ones because they can stop the whole effort that is being promoted here today, which I support. They can stop it dead in its tracks. And believe me, the climate in the several groups in the country is to do just that. Very recently, a couple or three of the major anti-gun, anti-handgun groups have decided that they're not getting much mileage out of the federal level and not all that much mileage out of the state level. And they are setting their sails, having meetings and planning on how to do it at the local level. We'll stop it town by town if we have to. So I hope as a very minimum you will pass what is before you, but I hope you'll put those two words in to close those loopholes. If you don't wish, I know, transfer may include sale, but it may not. Transfer has maybe a half a dozen different meanings, of which sale might be one. The word sale is used often in Oregon language now. It's used in many states. Many localities make their prohibitions by prohibiting sales. I could add the same things about the word use. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kotz. Are there any questions? If not, thank you, sir. Mr. Anslem?
Chairman Springer, members of the committee, my name is Ed Ranslam from Independence, Oregon. Speaking to in favor of House Bill 2855, it should be passed and probably with an emergency clause. This bill is needed to stop the harassment of persons in their travel within the state of Oregon by what I call Friday night ordinances. Ordinances that can be passed Friday night to catch sportsmen or other persons on Saturday morning. There are many hundreds of areas in the state that have the ability to pass ordinances, and yet, if your conduct is legitimate and tigered, the same conduct should be legitimate as you pass through LeGrand or Hillsborough. In other words, it should be the same for all persons. This law would give statewide confirmation to laws regarding firearms and is very necessary for the well-being of citizens of Oregon. I have As an officer, previous officer in the Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association, received much correspondence from people that have been harassed under these laws, and arrested, and had their firearms confiscated for what seemingly to the average person would be a very minor infraction. Yet they were treated like criminals, and these were not criminal people. In each case, they were the average citizen going about their business, and the law fell on them. And so this law is desperately needed to alleviate some of these problems.
Okay. We haven't heard a lot in terms of specifics. If you have an opportunity maybe to provide us with some copies of correspondence, or if you can share with us maybe some of the examples where you feel people have been unfairly subject to enforcement of various local ordinances, that might be helpful to us.
One that comes to my mind immediately was a gentleman driving in his pickup truck. He and his wife were dressed in their Sunday clothes, going out to visit their family at Vernonia to do some little grouse shooting, and he had a 20-gauge shotgun hanging in his gun rack in the pickup truck. There was not a round in the chamber, however, there was a round in the magazine. And he was stopped by a motorcycle officer in the city of Portland. And the conduct that he was subjected to was horrendous. Having been spent nearly 20 years in law enforcement myself, I can't condone that type of conduct by an officer. And ended up, he had a court case and expenses, and for naught. They were not accomplishing anything in the realm of criminal activity, mm-hmm. merely harassing the average citizen because he happened to have a shotgun hanging in his rack.
Was the reason, I don't know if you know much about it, we don't need to go into much detail, was the reason this individual was subject to this kind of problem because he had a loaded firearm and that was prohibited by city ordinance?
Correct. And he had no idea, lived all his life in the city of Portland, and yet had no knowledge that it was even on the books. Mm-hmm. This is what we're dealing with in this. Any city can pass an ordinance on Friday night and have it all ready Saturday morning. And no one else in the state knows about it except those people directly involved in that city with the ordinance. And probably not the members of the citizens of the city even.
Okay. Any further questions? If not, thank you, Mr. Ranslin.
Thank you.
Mr. Nichols, did you want to add something?
Yes, John Nichols, Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association. With regard to harassment of citizens under the current laws, we have one individual who I've been trying to talk into coming down here, but all he wants to do is put the incident behind him. He resides in Clackamas County. He's a businessman, meets the classic criteria, carries sums of monies and valuables, was robbed at knife points on the streets of the city of Portland, went to Clackamas County Sheriff, was issued a permit to carry a firearm concealed for self-defense, was apprehended in the city of Portland, and arrested, tried, and convicted for carrying a loaded firearm within the city limits of Portland. And we don't consider that fair. That's all I have to say.
Okay, appreciate that comment. Any questions? If not, thank you, John. That's it for those who have signed up to testify in 2855. Are there any other individuals who wish to testify on the bill? Okay, if not, we'll move on to the next bill that's up for first hearing this afternoon, and that's 2384. Representative Phillips, this is the switchblade bill. Did you want to speak to this bill?
I certainly did.
Okay. I would note while Representative Phillips is coming to the witness stand, we did have a note from Stephen Moe, who, though he cannot testify today due to some unanticipated circumstances, he does wish to testify later, so we will note that for the record, and if he is unable to make it personally, we hope he might be able to submit some written material. Okay. Paul, before you get started, Representative Tarzan, I understand you may be here to offer some testimony on 2855.
Support.
Okay. Would you like to make a formal statement, or would you like us just to note your support for the record?
Support.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. That will be noted. Thank you. Representative Phillips, 2384.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just came from the long-term care ombudsman and the human resources, and if you're at all kind to me after that experience, I'd appreciate it. You will see on 2384 that originally we, for the record, I'm Paul Phillips, State Representative, District 9, originally was introduced to deal with the switchblade situation. I brought a couple of illustrations for you that Representative Hill and I have been able to play with in past hearings. This is the one I particularly like, but let me pass that out. See if you can look for this. Don't hurt the equity.
Thank you.
Any more?
Now, some individual once said to me that they were using these as defensive weapons. I suggest to you that is imbecilic at minimum. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court also said they were defensive weapons by definition, so perhaps I don't win them all. What I did was introduce a bill, and then Eldon Johnson introduced a bill, and others introduced a number of bills really dealing with concealed weapons. And during that discussion, you may recall that one section of the Constitution, or one section of the law, was mentioned by the ACLU as being unconstitutional, but no one had dealt with it to clean up the bill. So what I did is meet with Frank Gruber and go through proposed House Bill 2384 and really work as hard as we could, don't hurt yourself please, to make this bill, one, constitutional, two, to codify other sections of the statute that refer to carrying concealed weapons, and also the final activity was to get with every group that I could think of, from the NRA, the ACLU, and the defense attorney or the district attorneys and police organizations, and get their opinions on the bill. The Sheriff's Association has suggested a couple of amendments. The DA said it was fine. I assume the ACLU looked at it, and if they have any further amendments, they'll probably come before you with those. I called the NRA in Washington, D.C. and spoke with them, and they had shown it to their attorneys, so we tried to identify all constituent groups and work with them as best as possible. I believe you have a copy of the amended version, is that correct, in your packet?
We have a Hammond Gross version. We may have some amendments also available.
You should have one, HB 2384-1, dated 3/21/85.
Okay.
Do you have those with you?
Well, let's check. Council advises me they were distributed to members, although I'm not sure when. This was scheduled for hearing, but we really didn't get a chance to get much into it, if I recall.
Right. In fact, I don't believe we even discussed it at all.
Okay.
When I started this, really, we wanted to deal with switchblades and throwing stars and a variety of other things. And if you look at the bill, did we determine that you have the Hand and Gross, or you do have the copy of the that I mentioned? Not the Hand and Gross. You also have a Hand and Gross one.
There's here. A Hand and Gross version and the amendments.
You do have the amendments.
Yes.
Okay.
These are not identified, but these are your Hand and Gross amendments.
These are the district attorney's Hand and Gross. We took those, and we have what I'd like you to work off was a House Bill 2384-1, okay, which we redid, frankly, so that it would be clean and clearly understood. And hopefully that's with you now.
Okay.
Do you have those?
Yeah.
Okay. If you want to go through it, we certainly can. You will notice since 166.220, I deleted, with the help of Frank Brewer, the carries or possesses a dagger, dirk, dangerous knife, razor blade, you know, it goes on listing all of those. And we put in the words, as you will read, that are all inclusive of those dangerous or deadly weapons. And rather than list each and every one of them, and every time a new deadly weapon, such as a sharpened screwdriver, comes onto the market, worry about whether it's defined in statute, whether it's a gun or a knife, if it's a dangerous or deadly weapon and used for use unlawfully against another, as defined by statute, then it should in fact be illegal. And we deleted all of the Section 2 of that. Now, that was the section that the ACLU mentioned was unconstitutional, never had been cleaned through the statute. And the unconstitutional